Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, they clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Oh no.
Don't tell me. We're about to record Experience Grind podcast, the podcast about getting older and the experiences we gain with films, movie, and nostalgia.
Yep.
Lots of weirdos in the Discord and endless polls about food.
Most definitely.
Bring it on. What's up, everybody?
What is up?
That was my modified intro I rehearsed with Ryan earlier via text. I was like, you're going to say this. Here's your lines.
Rehearse is very strong.
Yeah, we ran it through like on two different calls. We had to make rehearsals, you know. I brought
all the
scones.
That's great for the listeners.
Mm-hmm. We really commit.
I honestly thought that you meant that you rehearsed it via text message, and I was really confused as to how the timing was supposed mm-hmm. to work out on that. Like, Ryan, you're supposed to type faster. Just have it ready to send.
Yeah, you send it on the silent four.
It was very overwhelming.
It had the notes app open and copy pasting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my breath. I got excited and nervous halfway through it. And
it's like the waterfall.
But that's like that's live performance, baby. Ha! I say in the edited format that's recorded and could be redone, but
nah. Fuck yeah. It, we'll do it kind of live.
Yeah, we pretend to do it live.
Audio verite.
In case you didn't get it, that was a reference to the movie we're going to be talking about. My choice for this week, The Emperor's New Groove. I am, of course, joined by my good buddies. First up, the only man I think I have heard perform his own theme song, my good buddy Sean.
I have not performed my own theme song.
I feel like I've been with you at the Louisville Arcade Expo and you've been bebopping around like da 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 sa.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not my own theme song. That's just because I have a walking soundtrack. Like,
yeah. Like,
you know, when you just like walk into
music,
a room.
Like,
I guess so.
It's a light movie.
I Kramer, but all the time.
Like, you. I wish you did enter every room like Kramer. It would be such mm-hmm. a signature move.
That everyone would immediately say, hey, you ripping off Kramer? And I'd be like, yeah, probably.
100%.
And there are worse things to be accused of as you walk into a room.
Ways to be accused of being like Kramer.
There's definitely worse.
I'd rather be like Kramer and less like Michael Richardson.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. 100%.
Important distinction to make.
I'm also joined by my good buddy who likes to, you know, just casually poison people. My good buddy Ryan.
Oh yeah. Much
I knew
better.
We were going true crime.
Ryan did say that he
spoilers,
was going to
I'm
be
the one who
guy.
Did it. On the uh-huh. Experience Crime True Crime podcast to come, it's me. I killed them with poison in the white room.
Ooh.
What's funny is I'm just realizing this anecdote would have worked better for Ryan because this guy lives in isolation out in the middle of nowhere. My good buddy Brian.
How did I get burned on two?
It's like a boomerang of shots.
That was amazing. You catch the strays.
We watched Emperor's New Groove this week, a Disney, I'm going to say underrated gem. I'll throw my cards out early because I picked the movie.
Absolutely.
I obviously have some sort of feeling about it. But I'll give a brief rundown. But first, I do know Ryan has seen this. Brian, you said you'd seen about 90. Sean, you have never seen this.
Nope.
I saw this in theaters, fellas. I've been so hip to this. I'm an Emperor's New Groove hipster. Did you also, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Look at us.
Couple of
sure
OGs.
Did. And then downloaded it on LimeWire as soon as I could.
Damn, that guy's even crazier than me.
Thus explaining the box office totals this movie got.
uh, So yeah, I'm OG because, on
it. Where's My Car is a better movie.
It's crazy that came out the same year.
Yeah.
In the same week.
What Women Want. Like, yeah,
which was...
What a time capsule that movie is now.
Oh, man. There's a lot about that movie that'd be fun to talk about. Not necessarily good to talk about, but fun.
Yeah. Wait until you guys hear my pick for next week.
Ooh, snap.
What Women Want.
Yeah, did you guys do any background sideline research about the development of this movie? Because I would like to talk about that a little bit.
I think it's a good idea to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because this Kingdom movie, of the Sun,
at one point, was a completely different movie and was $40 million deep into production before it was canceled, drastically restructured, and remade as The Emperor's New Groove.
Had its sting removed, too, for the most part.
He's still in The Shining there's at the end, and that's something Ryan picked up on. Ryan and I watched it together. When was that? Last night?
Mm-hmm.
Which was a great time. I watched it over the weekend, too, and I saw him watching it, and I just hopped in. Because I fucking love this movie. Spoiler alert again. But he's like, where the hell is Sting coming at? Because the tone of that song is so drastically different from everything else in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's probably because this was from when the movie was a completely different one because it changed. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah. It also used to have Owen Wilson was going to be starring opposite David Spade.
Wow.
And choice.
Oh, wow.
It was going to be much more of a Princess and the Pauper style story where the two trade places. David Spade would still play Cusco, the emperor. But they looked alike, and they would switch places, and that would be the story of that one. But
and no one would even realize it. That David Spade doesn't even sound like this.
Yeah, the reason they liked Owen Wilson is because they thought he had a nice slack-drawed idiot style sound to him.
True,
and they believed he could sell Living in the Country. Yeah, they moved on from him. They moved on. They did keep Sting, I guess. What's crazy is that this was directed originally by the guy they brought in to fix The Lion King. And they were so impressed by what he did with that, because he turned that troubled production around, that they gave him free rein on this one. And it wasn't until they started seeing like his original vision that what he was creating was just way too dense. And so then they brought on another guy to fix it, and he took it in the much more lighthearted version. And eventually they didn't tell either one of them that they were writing a new pitch and were going to like pit them against each other. And then they did that. And the executives went with the more lighthearted comedy one and they fast tracked it. And we get The Emperor's New Groove. It's weird because I always have argued, I think in a lot of ways, like great art is created under constraint and restriction. And I think that can be argued with this movie because it was definitely under a time crunch because like I said, it was already 40 million deep into production when they totally scrapped all of that and restarted and rewrote everything. And, I think there's even still some hints in it. Cause in the original one, Yzma was originally pissed off at the sun because it aged her. And there's definitely still reference to that in this version because she's so wrinkly and they keep making reference to like how fucked up her skin is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll give a quick rundown of Emperor's New Groove here and then we'll dive into it. So it is a story about, of course, a spoiled prince played by David Spade who summons a... a peasant to his chambers to inform him that he's going to tear down his house to build his summer palace on with a water slide. And this, of course, is heartbreaking to the peasant voiced by John Goodman. Meanwhile, on the side, because this guy is such a spoiled asshole, his advisor, Yzma, played by Eartha Kitt, is plotting to kill him and enlists the help of her dim-witted assistant, Kronk, voiced by always call him just Putty.
That's how he got the job.
It is. Who just does fucking amazing. And of course, he screws up instead of using an actual poison. The label folded down to make the llama logo look like a skull. Of course, it's a honest mistake, to be fair.
I mean, anyone could make it.
Yeah, who hasn't been in that situation, right? So, of course, then Cusco gets transformed into a llama. Kronk is ordered to take him outside of town and kill him. Kronk can't really do that. He's secretly got a heart of gold, you see. So he just...
too kind of a person.
He tosses the bag with Cusco's body in the river. Can't commit to that. Is going to sneak him out and trips. And he, of course, by happenstance circumstance, lands in the back of the John Goodman peasant's cart, who doesn't realize until he gets all the way home and wakens to the demon llama that can talk. And then, of course, there's lots and lots of hijinks. The movie is really carried by these four characters. It's a buddy cop chase, almost like a, what do you call, a Stockholm syndrome style situation.
Yeah,
well, many hijinks that I don't want to get into here because I'm sure there'll be big parts of the discussion of coming up. But eventually, they, of course, get back to the kingdom. High value or high stakes fight on top of a really high building to get the last potion to turn Cusco back. Does he return with a heart of gold and learn humbling life lessons as a spoiled rich guy? Let's find out at the end in this discussion, boys. Hey! Let's break this down in the usual style. We got story. We got character. We got style. We got entertainment value. And we got direction. Direction will be fun because this really had two directors. So we'll see how that goes. Also, I'm still unsure how a director works in a cartoon situation. And more so a producer.
The overall product and tone, how cohesive it all came together.
Mm-hmm.
The sum of the parts.
He's overlooking all of that. But yeah, first up, I guess we'll go story, and we'll go round robin style. And I want to keep the mystique a bit, so I'm going to go first off, Ryan.
Okay. This is one where I'm going to talk, and I don't know where I'm at as I start talking. So we'll see where I score it as I talk myself. I think the story, as you put it, is good. Is it top tier good? I don't know. It feels pretty kind of standard. It's done really, really well. But is it that five? Is it like an amazing story with like twists and turns? And there are parts where I'm like, yeah, some of it's really, really good, especially when you compare at the time what Disney was doing before this. This is very different, very tonally, story-wise. They're doing meta stuff, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Man, there's a lot I really... Obviously, all right, I'm torn between a 4 and a 5. I'm not going to, like, elaborate all day on this. I think it's a really, really strong story, but is it like that fucking A tier? I don't know. I really wish I didn't go first. I really wish I could see where other people were going with this. I think I'm gonna go a very, very high 4.
Glad to hear.
I really like it.
Glad to hear. All right. Now let's go with the 90%er. Brian, after your first watch, talk to me a little about the story of Emperor's New Groove, buddy.
I'll say this. The story makes a lot more sense when you've seen the whole movie. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend seeing this one in clips and pieces and trying to figure it out on your own. Mm-hmm. Even though you probably could get the gist of it. It's not a very complex story. It's pretty simple, but it's done very well. And like Ryan said, there are some twists and turns there. They're like, oh, is he changed? Is he not? you never really quite know until the very end if Kuzco is going to be a good dude and do the things that he says he's going to do, or if he's just going to turn it all around again and be a selfish asshole. I like it. I think it's pretty good. I especially like all of the little meta stuff and fourth wall breaking and the references to itself. I think that's a lot of fun. But for me, it's also a very, very enthusiastic four.
I think on the story, and I'm going to make Sean go last because I'm very excited to hear it. But I like delayed gratification. You think so? Because I think, like, story-wise, number one, I think you guys are very, very nice. I think the story is one of the first signs of the overall production struggles this movie did have, because it is just incredibly base. But I think that serves the purpose of the movie well, and it dives into it so hard. Like, you don't need to worry about anything. But there's literally a point, like, at the end where Kronk and Yzma show up before Kuzco and Pacha, and they're like, wait, how did you guys get here before us? And they're like, honestly, we don't know. It literally doesn't make any sense. And it's a great joke, but it's also like, with the it happens for the story. I think, again, it's fun. The meat of this is in the jokes and in the storytelling itself. The story, therefore, can be very basic. The director that eventually did take it on said he was inspired a lot by a lot of Looney Tunes that he grew up with. And there's definitely like a lot of Looney Tunes in this. And the fact, too, that I think the story is overall like very base, because it's about the characters and what they're doing in the story. We don't care how they get there. The one thing I do really like, and it's something you both touched on, is how much they commit to the Kuzco being a dick bit. Because it's like a full 3/4 of the way through the movie before he actually does make the turn. It's not like the halfway point of the movie or something. He's still a spoiled prick through a good part of this movie. So I really appreciated that. It was a nice different change. But I think overall, I did almost have, I had a 3 here, but you guys talked me up. I'm a lower tier 4. Because I do think it does a lot of fun stuff, but it's nothing that I would write home about story-wise. It doesn't tickle my overall, but that's not bad. It's just, to me, it doesn't have that level to the 5, so.
You can tell that it was an overcorrection from the very full story that was being worked on beforehand.
It's the beats. And then it's the things that happen in the beats.
I honestly, to counter that, I never picked up on that. I never picked up on the story issues all of the many times I've seen it. And even last night watching it, it just felt like it was like that kind of like ahead of the curve when it came to like that edgy aughts humor where they were like breaking narratives and breaking rules. And it's a movie that's breaking rules. And like, you're right. Narratively, it's a little base. I agree 100%, but I think the way it breaks rules is very fun, especially in a kids movie at that time. And I think maybe that's why I'm also a little higher in the 4, just for clarification, because I panicked and splurted out diarrhea out my mouth when you called my name earlier.
All right, Shawnee boy, the boy who has never seen Emperor's New Groove, talk to me about the story, buddy.
Well, for everything that has been said as like high marks and marks towards the positive are actually things that I didn't like about this movie. I didn't like the self-referential stuff. I didn't like the meta stuff. I thought this story was as base as it could be. And we're not on characters yet, but I'll get back to that after. This is pretty bottom tier Disney story for me. I'll say I don't want to give a 2 because that feels really mean. I'll give a 3. Pretty baseline 3.
So you're more in line with the general audience at the time that saw this movie. And it's definitely, It's a love-hate one, I feel, almost.
Mm. And it's like, I don't, and I'll get more into this with, like, the characters, but, like, I think, like, I had a hard time with this movie, and that really outside of, well, I guess Kronk's pretty likable, but Pacha feels like literally the only likable character in this movie. And because, like, even by the end of it, Kuzco, hate that guy. Like, I don't care that 3 minutes of redemption that you had, possibly, maybe, I don't know, spoilers. Whatever. Just feels like it was out of self-preservation and survival. Well, instead of actually changing.
Keep going with character, because we'll roll right into that. You gave three on story, right?
Okay. So, people have already mentioned David Spade, or, well, can't speak for David Spade, but Kuzco, just absolute dog shit, spoiled brat prince. You know, he's got this whole character arc. Sure. It doesn't even feel like an arc. It just feels like at some point he just like is like, okay, all right. You know, I faked it the last 17 times, but by golly, I'm good now.
The boy who cried.
I think Pacha was a fantastic character. I think Pacha's wife, fantastic. So much fun.
Bojack's mom.
Watching this for the first time and just like seeing how dogshit Kuzco is and then seeing how dogshit Yzma is, it's like watching an election season and being like, all right, well, who's the least dog shit? So it was like there was at no point was I rooting for Kuzco to actually get back. In fact, every time when the scorpions run on, I'm like, I hope the scorpions kill him. Hope he falls in that river. Like, I don't know. I'll give the characters also a three.
That seems high after that.
It does seem high.
That does seem very high.
Two.
He goes
you guys talked me down
we
to a
talked
two.
Talked him down.
Live your truth.
Because it sounds like you don't like.
Kronk is good enough, I think, to just elevate it because he is just
he is
so innocent and dumb, but at the same time, very smart in different areas. And he's so endearing and charming that you can't, like, it's almost like I'm giving him a bonus point here. So I'm going to stick with a three. Mainly because of Kronk.
The old Kronk bump.
Kronk bump.
Well, speaking of the Kronk bump, I'll come in here as the counter to Sean, because I think where this movie fully excels is in these characters. So out of the gate here, I come out with five. I love everything David Spade does in this movie. I think as a character, Kuzco, David Spade, is who you want. To the point that when they brought him on, they're like, all right, David Spade was trying to get a feel for the character. And he's like, so what do you guys want? Like a smarmy type guy or like a rich hoity-toity type? And they're like, no, just, you know, your normal, whiny, annoying, sarcastic voice. And he was like, okay. So, I mean, David Spade boiled down. Like Ryan and I were kind of observing, it feels a lot of times like a lot of their stuff is sort of like ad-libbed or free-flowed. Like, especially David Spade is like you can tell they just kind of let him go and like do his David Spade rambly bits on a lot of this. Especially like when they do the pullouts and he's self-narrating over himself. I love even that when like when he like scribble. He like X's out Pacha, leaves the screen, comes back, scribbles on him real hard, and does like that little David Spade, ha ha, and like sneaks back off. Yeah. Just such little perfect touches that I enjoy so much. And then of course, yes, Kronk. Kronk is such a fucking amazing part of this movie. He is so stupidly charming. Just so fucking perfect. The theme music when he's sneaking out. And he's humming to himself.
Yeah.
It's so damn charming. His love of cooking. I love how much character this fucking fourth tier side character in a Disney movie gets. Like, he has things you feel, you know what this character is about. It's amazing that they pull this out in such a limited screen time for Kronk. and how charming. He's one of the most loved characters about this movie. Eartha Kitt as Yzma is just chewing up the fucking scenery left and right and just absolutely boss bitching it out. I fucking love it. I'll be honest with you. I think John Goodman is the blandest part of this movie. He doesn't really have much to do with Pacha. I think he does great as Pacha, but it's just he is the straight man to the wild, zany David Spade character. So, and I think in that regard, he does great. But all that to say again, come around five. I fucking love the way they go with this. Brian.
I think they did an excellent job, especially in casting. I mean, like you said about David Spade, I mean, perfect. You need somebody who can be an asshole, but still has that endearing quality that makes you, on some level, still want to root for them. There's not a lot of actors who can pull that off with just their voice, where you're like, okay, I know he's being a dick right now, but there's still something charming about him. I still want to root for him. Whereas John Goodman, you always want to root for John Goodman, even when he's a bad guy, because the man is, he's a good man, is what he is. And then Eartha Kitt is just, and the fact that, spoiler alert, she gets turned into a cat at the end makes me so happy. And I mean, like, what can you say about Patrick Warburton that hasn't already been said here? The man is so good. And fun fact about that music he's humming is that was all improv'd, and Disney made him sign away the rights to his just mindless humming singing to himself. So he couldn't claim rights later and get money for it. Classic mouse, Disney lawyers.
Mouse always goes for it, man.
Oh, yeah.
He gets his.
I really like these characters. I do agree with Sean that Kuzco is not great. He's not great, and it takes a long time for you to trust him. And even then, you're like, I still don't know. There's still that chance that he might not be reformed. It's a powerful scene when he's with the llamas and he's trying to come to terms with, like, I guess this is just what I have to be now. And then there's Pacha sitting there just talking about him, knowing that he's there. It's just, it's really good. And I like these characters a whole lot, but not enough to give it a five. So it's going to be a four for me.
Ryan, I gave you the courtesy of going last this time.
Thank you. This one, I feel like I'm pretty, I know where I'm at on. I feel like I'm pretty good. I love these characters. I would not consider Kronk a fourth tier character. I will honestly echo a lot of what everybody said. Yes, Patrick Warburton has a voice made for cartoons and fucking anything. His voice is so fucking perfect. Read me books, please. Fucking whatever. War and Peace. I don't care.
Call me
it's
Ishmael.
So good. It's all the audiobooks. Moby Dick by Burton. Yes, please.
Goodbye.
I'm into all of the casting, as everybody said here. Eartha Kitt's eating the scenery. I fucking love it. She's so good as the villain. I am not a David Spade person. I find him kind of annoying sometimes, and I feel like he does have a shtick that he does, and it's kind of what he does here. And yet, for some reason, I think it really works. I think this is maybe more of a story note than a character note, but I really like how long they delay his turn. I think the 17 times they go back and forth really, honestly, feels more real, because I feel like somebody that fucking stubborn is not going to have, like, the one time where they see the good and they're like, oh, okay, I can be good too and do good to others. It's going to take a fucking lot to get through that skull. And like David Spade and this character is fucking perfect for it. I think it's perfect casting. But to go even beyond that and talk about something we've not talked about, the design of these characters, I think, are really cool and iconic. I love how kind of Kuzco looks like Kuzco in the llama form, similar to his like human form. There are like little touches that just carry over. I love the Yzma transformations later and like their back and forths and Kuzco going through all the different animal stuff. There's a lot of cool designs. I love the look of the characters too. I think they've all got a very, in the way like Overwatch, like you can kind of see like the silhouettes of a figure and be like, boom, I know who that is. they all have a very distinct shape and size and like kind of animation about that. And
who's
maybe
that
this
Pokemon?
Is... Exactly.
It's me.
This is maybe like less, you know, important in a live action movie, but in a cartoon, I think this does build to the characters. And so like the visual style, I think, is very crucial to character. And I think that is, I think it adds something here. I think it's great. So this is a 5 for me too. I'm right there with Kyle.
One of the things I really like about Yzma is that you get these moments where she does these incredible athletic feats and you're like, now why is Croc carrying her around all the time, actually?
Sex.
Well, that's...
this is my theory after
that. That was not an implication I had read into it, but it makes sense.
That's what I didn't pick up on that either, but he does make a good argument. Run with it real quick. Present it to the jury here.
All right, so granted it's not a lot. And it's mostly on the May-December thing, just being like, why is she with this one lackey so much? But at the first table dinner that Kuzco is still human where they poison him, Kuzco, like, makes this, like, kind of, like, really accusatory remark about, like, oh, how old is he? And it's in this way.
I think he
says
this one.
It's not just, like, how old is this one? Yeah. And it's not in a way that's just, like... you like younger workers, but like it implies something a bit more, and it kind of feels like the reverse of like that kind of like, I don't know, for me this is like Leo DiCaprio, but like a lady.
I was about
this
to
is
say,
lady Leo.
It's like having that friend that always dates a 21-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's why they have kind of like these bickering frustrations, because they're boning on the side. But Disney's never going to talk about that, but Yzma and Kronk definitely doing
it's
it.
Because of the implication.
The implication.
Because of the implication.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you were talking about the stylization of the characters. Let's roll into the style. I'll take lead on this one. Like you said, the characters all have a very distinct style. And I think overall the movie does too. I like it's, again, I think one of the niceties of the budgetary constraints and the timeline they were under, the art style in this movie is very base, but it serves it. Like in the city, everything is very square and harsh and angled. And then once they're out in like Patch's place, everything is rounded and warm and smooth. And even like, you know, the characters, Kronk is this big bulky, like the barrel chest. Yzma's the stick. I love all that. I love the giant faces of like the southern... Inca gods all over the place. The fucking crazy colors it goes into, like when they're in the lab and all like the different sharp purples and pinks. The way I almost, this is maybe more in the entertainment value, but I love so many of like the callbacks or like the self-referential jokes, like when Kuzco and Pacha go to the lab later and they're stuck in the lab costumes designed for Yzma and Kronk and they're just ill-fitting. And again, it cuts there for like, I don't know, it's just like 3 seconds maybe. It's such a stupidly quick joke. But it's very stylized still, the way that it's presenting all of this. I guess they are jaguars. The way they all look, it's like that Disney cat style almost. But it's still, it's recognized. The crocodiles, too, they look almost like the ones from Hook. But it's because it's like, hey, man, it works. The fucking get it out. I don't know. I like all of that. It has like, I don't want to say rushed style, but it has a deliberate like, this is this feeling. This is this feeling. Go with that. And I like it all. I think style overall is going to get a very nice 4 out of me. So, although there are some flirtings with 5, I do like some of the random more bits, like the disco guy out of nowhere, voiced by an uncredited Tom Jones. We'll bounce back around. Ryan will go second this time.
Perfect.
Because he just wet his whistle.
I know exactly. Yeah, you caught me right with some Coke in my mouth. Better than Coke in the nose. I'm going to finish it.
I was going to. Okay.
What were you going to say? Coke in the butt?
No, cock in the mouth.
Boofing it? Cock in the mouth. Oh, yeah, that's better. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Better than coke in the cup. Yum, though.
Style. this is another one I feel like I've got right out the bat. I got. I love the style here. I echo what I said with the characters, and you just paint it across the broad brush of the look of this movie. I think the set, they're not sets, the backdrops, the locations are gorgeous. I love the stairs, as you said. I think the final set piece with the giant face statue that they're using is like maybe a bit of an homage to North by Northwest. There's like really cool little things in this fucking movie. I love the style. I think this really stands out, especially again, compare this to Disney movies and how it looks. I think that kind of Mayan influence is super fucking cool and adds a lot. You talked briefly about like the beakers, but like how they are like shaped like the Mayan paintings and the hieroglyphs are like so fucking cool. Like that's such a neat and clever idea. If you want inspiration for like where they got fucking Wakanda, look at this fucking movie, because this movie did it first. I think there's a lot of like, we're going to take what they did here and just like kind of make it a little bit modern and like implement into things we don't like typically see with that style. I think this is great. This is a 5 for me again. I think the style is perfect. I think this is one of the better looking, better art directed Disney movies, hands down, period.
All right. Shawnee boy, let me hear you.
I think visually, I gotta agree with all the visual stuff. It really hearkened to all of the things that I loved that they had done with Hercules just 3 years prior. I loved the whole aesthetic you know, everything that was done with that, whether it be, you know, the intricacies in some of the scenery. But then there's also the times where they pull it back and it's a very stripped down and almost, I don't want to say like mosaic-y kind of thing, but it is, you know, that's
the silhouette Hercules style.
It was very rooted in, you know, that Greek culture, and here it's like a Mesopotamian kind of thing. So that's, you know, the art style and the relics and whatnot. So I really appreciated that. I love the tone of this movie. Unfortunately, the music is going to knock this movie. It's going to knock this category. Like, what the fuck was the point in even keeping Sting in this movie? Like, just cut that shit out. Or put literally anything else in, because for a movie that has the name, the word groove in it, this movie sure as hell had next to no music, and what was there was subpar. So, I'm going to give it a 3.
The one Sting song they did use was like the Tom Jones song. Sting wrote that one.
Well,
that had that ending big Sting style. Song. Well, yeah, he had the two credit songs too.
That ending Sting song sucked some farts. It was not very good. I hated it. It did not fit the tone in this movie. I respect your 3, and of course it's your 3. I will just say I love the trumpets in this movie. I thought this was like a proto like incredible soundtrack. For me, the soundtrack, there was not like songs like in a musical or whatever Tom Jones was singing was like whatever. But the actual soundtrack for me was popping. I love the soundtrack.
I'm with Ryan with this one. It's very, for me, it was very popping, very bopping. It's nothing that I can remember, but I feel it just perfectly set the high energy tone for what the movie was going for a lot of times. But
I think the big problem for me is, sure, I'm sure there was things in there. Mm-hmm. There was never a time where I noticed really that anything was going on. And unfortunately, when I did, is because the ending, where as soon as the music starts playing, it says it's music so by weird. Sting. And I'm like, fuck off.
It was funny. Because Ryan and I were like, we were listening to it. We're like, this is fucking weird. Like, this doesn't fit. Who even did this? It rolls up, this song performed by Sting. And we're like, what the fuck?
Fucking Sting.
It was so weird.
Yeah,
it's like, it's almost flaunting it up there like it's Tarzan. It's like,
Phil Collins, let's go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what the idea was, they hired Sting on because they wanted to kind of do what they did with Elton John for The mm-hmm. Lion King. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like Sting wrote like 6 songs, according to the old story. And the whole time his wife was filming a documentary about the making of the music for the movie. What was it? The Kingdom of the Sun.
Kingdom of the Sun.
And so like Sting is heavily invested in this, and uh-huh. he, and I guess Disney were like, all right, we'll let you include 3 songs on the album, but none of it connected to the story anymore. And yeah. they've also like The Sweatbox was the name of the documentary about the music, and it ended up turning into a documentary about just the production nightmare of this movie. Uh-huh. But Disney owns the rights to the documentary, so it will never be released.
No, I
which yeah. sucks.
Wow. It would be great to see. I was going to ask, where can I watch this?
Yeah, wow. It's so I think at some point it got uploaded onto YouTube and then immediately taken down because the mouse is lawyers. But I think there's clips of it that float around here and there. The documentary is called The Sweatbox, and basically, it's very Sting and music focused, about like creating the music for the original movie, and then when everything shifts, how they have to adapt, and it's very interesting.
There's
Can you guys imagine?
I've not seen it.
Damn. If after like Doki Doki Panic got reskinned into Mario Brothers 3, you're just running around and it's just Whistle While You Work nonstop. Yeah, I meant Super Mario 2. It's just Whistle While You Work the entire time.
Like, there was there's apparently a funny scene in that documentary. Well, I would find it funny, where they screen the original run of the movie, and Sting is invited to it. And afterwards, like, an executive is like, this is the biggest piece of shit. This is awful. I have no idea what's happening. We have to fucking fix this. This is terrible. And is just ranting. And then at the end, Sting very kind of meekly goes, I thought it was all right.
Oh, I actually God. Read that Sting was the one to suggest a change to the ending, where instead of Kuzco taking over another hill and making his whole big thing, that would mean he didn't really learn anything, so instead he gets downgraded to this tiny hut that he mm-hmm. lives
it looks in like
the summer Patches. near Patches. But because Sting was like, if he just builds it somewhere else, he didn't really learn anything. And mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting mm-hmm. note coming from Sting.
Sting would have that note. He probably wrote it from his mansion. Hey-o!
On a hill.
Hire me for The Daily Show, guys. I'm available. I've got biting, witty commentary about 80s pop stars.
And just an ace Australian accent.
Oh, man, you can't knock it. Can't knock it.
So, style.
Yeah, Brian, please.
I adore the style of this movie. I think it is so well done, and I think it's so dialed in to... You have scenes where they clearly went all out on the entire cell, and then you have other scenes that have the painted background that they mm-hmm. reuse, and it's always used with such intention that... You know exactly, they're focusing the attention on what needs to be focused on so well. And the individual character styles and just the look of the whole thing and all of the ink and iconography, and just they did phenomenally well with what little time they had to actually animate this thing, because basically they were like, hey, we got to get this out in the summer of 2000 because we got a McDonald's deal. And they had less than a year to basically do all this after the first 4 years were spent on the old script and style. So it's just super impressive. And this is going to be a 5 from me.
Nice.
Mr. Person keeping track of scores, can you bump me to a 4 on that?
I can bump you to a 4.
Ooh.
I don't see how I can drop it down to a 3 just because of music. Like, the style in this movie is fucking through the roof. So I'll ding it a point. But
I think that's fair.
Also, they did have that deal with McDonald's and all their partners, but that still did not end up going to Emperor's New Groove. Emperor's New Groove did get its approved pushback once they totally committed to flipping it and redoing it. They had to give it to him. So they gave that spot to the movie Dinosaur, which also ended up suffering from story problems and flopped because its production was pushed to make that commitment. And that's why there are Dinosaurs Happy Meal toys and not Emperor's New Groove Happy Meal toys.
I learned something today. Mm-hmm. I also forgot Dinosaur existed.
Dinosaur, I'm looking it up right now because I completely
forgot. It was a CG movie.
This.
It was not good.
It's not good. Mm. And I think we've learned if you're trying to do a dinosaur animated movie, you just shouldn't, because Land Before Time did it, and they did it like 13 or 15 times. So
hot take, even those aren't good.
Yeah, like that's my 12 of them.
There's also We're Back, A Dinosaur's Tale. You remember
We're Back? Speaking of John Goodman,
yeah, I know John Goodman was the T-Rex in that one.
Man, what a
weird ass flick.
This looks like
anyways,
the lowest rendered version.
It's
of like
really
an
bad,
FMV
dude.
It's
like
video.
Early CGI. Like it was like back when Square did the Final Fantasy movie, and it's like it's cool. You shouldn't have done it yet. It's not time.
Yeah, the Spirits Within. You mean
it's not ready?
Yeah, yeah. The Spirits Within. Yeah, Dinosaur could have been cool. Not yet. Too soon. Anyways, we're not talking about that. Emperor's New Groove entertainment value. I'm coming out of the gate on this one. I give this motherfucker, this is getting the bonus point, boys. This is getting a 6.
Ooh.
This movie is still so fucking funny. I watched it Saturday. I watched it again with Ryan last night. I still was laughing out loud at this fucking movie. I've just seen these jokes. I know these jokes. It's one of those, I typed him in the chat. I was like, I feel like my dad because this next bit coming up is real funny. And it was really funny. And I forget even what it was. But goddamn, I fucking love David Spade. I don't know why. His humor style works for me really well. I've always loved him since fucking Tommy Boy. I love Black Sheep. Of course, he's great as the straight man. I also think he's great as the fucking comedy foil. He can do all of it. I really love him in this movie. I fucking love just everything. It's fucking hilarious. I love how self-centered and selfish Cusco is. I don't know why. It's hilarious to me. And just the delivery. This movie's great. I could watch it right now and still laugh and still get entertainment out of it. I love that it's animated so you know it's short and even more budget constraints. That's just the fucking finest cut of everything. It could have been garbage, but they just boiled everything down to the perfect, hey, this is great. I know they were writing a lot of jokes like on the fly, like, hey, it'd be funny if we also had this. Yeah, let's do it. Add it in. There's a fucking like 3-second scene where they're trying to get Yzma out of the house and Patch's son is like using a floor buffer you would see in like a bank lobby. It's fucking technology that doesn't even exist. It's there, it's very Looney Tunes. It's just there for the fucking joke. I love the Looney Tunes style. It's got that just the physical comedy is everywhere. I fucking love this movie, man. Hilarious. Sean. Fuck me down.
Listen, that is going to take a lot because it is weird being like I feel like the odd one out on this episode, and that's okay. You know, different strokes, different folks. And for everything that I've said, you know, 9 times out of 10, even like the lowest tier Disney movies still better than a lot of other movies. So in entertainment value. And while I did not laugh a single time during this movie, because man, I really, truly hated David Spade's character. I guess maybe I just don't like David Spade. I don't know. I will still, I still see the entertainment value in this, and it did relatively well in the box office, you know, worldwide. You know, I'll give it I'll give it a 4 because it's still very entertaining. I still like, I was, my eyes were very visually massaged. An hour and 20 minutes, man. Like, come on.
You can't like, beat that. It's runtime. Quick.
It's a Disney movie that I hadn't caught, and I've seen most of them. So I'm glad that I checked that off the list. And yeah. Yeah. It was entertaining. Don't really like the character, but it was entertaining.
And not laughing, you were just training for Snyderfest.
I like Rob Schneider more than David Spade.
That's insane to me.
That is insane. Wow. To me,
absolutely insane. And I will insane.
Stand by that.
Wow.
That just broke my brain.
Have you seen his Netflix show?
No.
I don't remember what it is. It might be like Big Rob.
Oh, God.
No, I'm not going to watch that.
And it's a very self-aware of him and his very, very privileged first class problems.
Oh, I bet it is.
It's a lot of fun.
Neat.
He's great.
Have you seen The Animal?
With Colleen Ballinger?
From
Survivor Australia?
Oh, man.
Yes, I have. The Survivor Outback. What? Sorry.
Have you seen The Hot Chick?
With Rachel McAdams?
Yeah.
A Hot Chick gets turned into Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider. All right.
The real Rob.
I did want to say, again, on entertainment value, awful. I feel like all the jokes are kind of in my wheelhouse. I do love random style humor, and that's peppered throughout this movie. There's this fucking weird, you would only see it in an early 2000s comedy, where like they pull super far back to like this monkey in a tree, and then David Spade's like, hey, come on, that's a little too far back. And they're like, and they zoom back in.
That felt like a Citizen Kane reference to me.
It's just because it's so out of nowhere.
There is a random shot in like the beginning of Citizen Kane where there's just monkeys eating bugs. Mm. And I'm like, this movie's made a few calls references? To like to classic cinema. And it's just, I was like, are you really caning right now?
They could have been, which again, to them, kudos. Could give it a 7. Brian, talk to me about entertainment value, pal.
I mean, I was endlessly entertained. I was laughing along. There was one point where I laughed and then said, that's a good fucking bit.
What bit was it?
I don't even remember which one it was.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember because like I was like, oh man, that's so good. And then like,
I wished I could remember the one that I loved so much last night.
Just things like where they're just zooming out and you're like, okay, the scene's over. And then it flashes back in for one beat and then goes back out again. Like, oh, that guy from the diner. He didn't pay his tab. And then it zooms out again. And then you feel like the scene has got to be over now. And it zooms back and he's like, wait a minute. I know where I know him from. It's so good. It's a 5. It's a 5. I could watch it again right now.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Ryan?
I'm going to echo what Sean said about the 80-minute mark. And, like, that is enough to, like, put me in, like, a 3 at the very minimum. Because I'm happy that you're not wasting my time. But I'm also right there with Brian. I love this. I have a blast. Every time I watch it, it goes by so quick. I think it's really quickly paced. It moves quickly. And if we're talking like usually this sometimes reflects like the box office and its impact on the film industry as a whole, I do think this is really ahead of the curve in a lot of what followed. I think it set like kind of the modern template for a lot of animated movies that now put in a lot more, you know, farts and needle drops, which is great. Minions love it. But like that is like, I do think this is the prototype for that. So I do think this did have kind of an effect. It definitely got Disney out of like their very rigid way of doing things. I'm glad Sean brought up Hercules because Hercules was one in my blind sight that I just forget about. Hercules was also one of the ones who started doing that. But like, it was like a 1-2-3 punch of like that, this, and Lilo and Stitch that got Disney to like finally, let's do something different and embrace these different things. So I do think this is part of like a very influential wave and push of Disney stuff too. So for that, in addition to like just, I think this is such a breezy watch. 5.
It's a shame that this was the last widely released animated film before the introduction of the Academy Award for animated film.
Damn. It would have got something. Snubbed.
Probably.
Doesn't matter anyway.
It probably would have.
But... for Dinosaur.
That's it.
Like I said it last night. It's like this movie was very ahead of its time for what it was doing. Like its joke delivery style and what it was doing, especially with the animated sphere. It did turn into what Disney eventually started to embrace, that offbeat alt humor that, you know, it didn't have to be so damn paint by numbers family friendly. Color outside the box. Or not have a box at all. Whoa.
There is no box.
There is no box, bro.
No box, only penis.
You can take a scene to establish that when you run, it leaves a trail, and then pull down the map in the next scene to explain, I don't know how we got here either.
Well, I remember that's the bit that I was like, my dad knew. I was like, this is a good bit coming up. And it fucking is. I also do love the callback when, like, Cusco's coming in and the alligator's on his ass, and he's like, why does she have that? Why does she even have that lever? Yeah. Such a great little callback to Yzma saying it earlier. Again, just, what they do, it's just condensed and perfect. And, onto that, we will talk about direction. Let me kick it off this time with Ryan.
Well, I will say, and again, I guess I base direction on how cohesive this all is as a product. How did it come together? Is there like a singular vision? I honestly can't tell that this was like production held to bit and like had $40 million or $30 million spent before they had like restart all over again, essentially. And like Sting was a big part of it. The only way I would have fucking guessed is by that awful, awful ass song at the end. But, like, otherwise, I think this is really surprisingly coherent. Like, everything gels. There's not, like, anything that sticks out. Like, anytime you hear about these movies that have, like, huge, like, reshoots and behind-the-scenes things, like, you can tell. There are just, like, certain things that don't quite fit, like... an arc that doesn't work, or like somebody has a wig that now sticks out, and like obviously you can
Samurai Cops.
Samurai Cops one. There's so many. There's
Fantastic Four as well, right? Homegirl's wearing a very obvious wig. Yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and even Brave New World, a recent one, like it got like torn to shit because of its behind the scenes production issues and like reshoots and all this stuff, but like. If it's done in a way where you can't tell, it doesn't matter. And like hearing about all of the production issues behind Emperor's New Groove kind of surprises me because I could not tell. I did not tell in the many times I watched this. I think as a cohesive product, this is great. This is a 5 for me. I don't know the directors. I don't know what they've done. I don't know that there's a specific like, trait to be ascribed to them, but like I think there is a style for this movie. I think there is a cohesive singular style and vision, and for me it came across. It's a 5.
Shawnee boy, take the direction.
Man, something we didn't even mention in the last category is like this domestic gross $89 million on an estimated budget of $100 million, of which almost half of that was a scrapped film. Mm-hmm. So like the fact that like if they just hit this right off the bat the first time, how much more impactful and impressive this would have been. And going back to what we're talking about now with the direction, like seriously, any preferential things aside in terms of like my own preferences and like the things that, you know, I could see possibly as something as this movie as a cohesive thing. Like, I wasn't a big fan of the whole, like, how did you get here before us? Like, I thought that whole bit, just toss it out the window. Don't care.
That's like the best bit in the movie.
Hated it.
Sean's calling it out for the cop out. It is.
It is.
In the thing, oh my God.
Kronk's a plot device.
I'm going to go on a rant.
He's a narrative plot device to like do shortcuts. Kronk is a shortcut narrative device. He is.
Yeah. If they didn't draw attention to it, I would have been like, oh, wonder how that happened. And then just went on with my life. But the fact that they just like zoomed in on it, I'm like, fuck off. Anyways. this is a 5 for me because I really can't, you know, differences in what I preferred in the movie doesn't take away from the fact that I think, especially with all of the issues that this movie had in production and just being made, that doesn't take away from the fact that at the end of the day, this was a fully put together, realized vision for this movie. Whether or not it's for me, different story, but I can't knock points off of that. This was, they took something that was going straight into the shitter and made something awesome out of it. I gave it a 4 in entertainment. Like, you know, it's 5.
Respect.
It's crazy that The Lion King had a budget of $40 million and the first run at this movie had that budget and they were just trying to emulate it. And then it's insane how much it doubled when they fucking had to get rid of everything. Because I'm sure they still had contract shit to pay to Sting. Two directors. But on directors, Bry Guy, hit me up, buddy.
So, director of this movie, the final version that we did end up getting, was Mark Dindal. Mm-hmm. And Dindal, before this, did Cats Don't Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a movie I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm. Seen it.
And since then, he directed Chicken Little in 2005, the Garfield movie in 2024, and he is slated to do an animated Funko movie of some sort.
Oh, God.
In the future, which, come on, guys, let it die.
Emoji movie 2.
There's no, and it's Warner Brothers, so who knows if it'll ever even be released. It doesn't matter.
That's sad, but true.
And it surprised me when I saw that because I thought he would have a lot more credits to his name after this movie because damn it, this is a delight. And the production issues that it got weighed down in seemed to just suddenly vanish as soon as this guy took over and Disney went with his vision for the movie. And I don't know if that's because it's a pared down, simpler version of what the original movie was, or if just they were working these people to the bone to get it out on time. But the fact that it came together the way it did and is as cohesive and entertaining as it is a goddamn miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 5 from me.
I really only struggled if was I going to give the 6 to entertainment value or director. And I gave it to entertainment value. But I do think if I could, I would give it here too, because like you said, it's amazing this movie A, came together, and B, is so fucking funny. At least to me, you know, again, different strokes, different folks. Sean didn't have the same reaction, but the people that fucking like this movie, it's fucking great. It's a lot of people put it in a top tier Disney movie. It is my favorite Disney animated movie. I fucking love this movie.
Wow.
The fact that they saved it out of what it was and made it into what it was. I think the impact of this movie can be felt in the fact I was telling Ryan, there's like 3 top tier gifts from this movie alone. That's you got the Pacha doing the okay.
Yep.
You've got Kronk saying, oh yeah, it's all coming together. And then what's the fucking third one? I forgot it. Bring it on.
Bring it on.
When he just says, bring it on. Use that one a lot too. Like 3 very popular just segments that I think are still, Kronk especially, Kronk is still well loved today. You still see people talk about Kronk. I think that says just enough in the impact of the movie alone that it's such a low tier like Disney hit in the reference or the zeitgeist, but like Kronk ascends.
Kronk got his own movie.
Past the, yeah, and I've never seen it.
Show.
There was a show. It's not I'm just Kronk's saying, show, like, though.
He was that popular and yeah. such mm-hmm. a big character for them that he got his own movie and possibly show.
I'm pretty sure Patrick Warburton's TikTok is all just him doing Kronk impressions.
That's awesome.
To this day. And I guess it's not really an impression because it's him, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like David Spade's Cusco is just David Spade. Yeah, just be a normally noisily whiny self, you know. Like, oh, okay. I do love the fucking bit, the Squirrel Scout bit. So fucking.
So good.
Hilarious. And Patrick Warburton doing squeaker dirty squeaker, squeak, squeaker.
Squeak, squeak,
squeakity, squeak, squeaker, squeak.
So fucking great. Yeah, five for me too, man. I think it's amazing what they did with this movie. And like I said, a lot of times great art is made under constraint. This movie's another
yes.
example in that caliber. So kudos and to them, man.
They had unlimited reign with that $40 million start and maybe mm-hmm. shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
It's a double down on restraint.
Exactly.
Restrain gotta, them gotta artists.
Got to rein in these creative types or they just get all loopy.
This is why AI is winning.
Oh, fuck.
Starting to hurt my soul a little bit.
Now no, I'm sad. All right. Bry Guy.
It's, yeah.
Score us up, man. That's everybody's scores, right?
That is everything. It's all in. And our total for The Emperor's New Groove is a 90.
Good Lord.
It's a big score.
Incredibly
when
high
you,
still.
When you look at the Rotten Tomatoes, which was an 86 critical, 84 audience. This is a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 70 on Metacritic, and a 3.9 out of 5 on Letterboxd. So
okay.
Take we are on the high end of the spectrum.
Take away the bonus point.
Take away
stuff.
That bonus point.
Make it an 89.
Still, that's fair. We are on the higher point, I feel, but that's fair. We did have threes absolutely love it here, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That checks out. I'm
and
happy with
didn't
that.
Love it as much, but gave it a lot of respect.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
I think
and had all solid the points about Sting sucking ass and should
oh,
not
God, that
being
song
involved in
should not
any
have been
project
in a
creatively going forward ever.
Hold up, is that a new category? Can I give my bonus point to that?
Sting sure. sucking ass.
Yeah,
six.
No, there we go. Yeah, that was Emperor's New Groove. I appreciate you guys letting me dive in that one. That was a real feel-good thing. I watched it twice this week. It's been a good week for me, boys. So.
I'm going to watch it again.
You really mm-hmm. should. I encourage it. It is still fucking funny.
Took me back to childhood.
Can confirm.
Loved it.
Yeah, I alluded to Snyderfest earlier. This is a silly thing. I think we're going to try to get off the ground. We're going to make a wager on watching a Snyder flick. And the last person to laugh, or just not laugh at all, is going to win. So stick around for more info on that. We'll, I guess we'll have to pick a movie. We'll have to maybe do some blind voting.
Maybe we can put up to some Discord Patreon members.
We could. That'd be a nice benefit of the Discord. Tell people more about this Discord, Sean.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed what you heard here, and actually, we'll get to my pick after this. For next week. But if you like what you enjoyed here, you can always head on over to our Patreon linktree.com/experiencegrind. You're going to find our Patreon where you're going to get bonus episodes. You're going to find a link to our Discord. Come and join us. Somebody talked earlier about, I think it was Kyle, about rating food and porn, probably food porn and movies yeah. and grinding gears. You know, that's
porn,
what you're
food,
upset
porn
about
movies.
Stuff. Send me pictures of your dogs. Mm-hmm. Cat people do not apply.
Get some tips from your upcoming travel. We do it all.
Oh, hell yeah. Micah just got back from Vegas. Like, that was so much fun just seeing
I did enjoy seeing all of
doing.
His fucking pics, man. That was cool as hell.
Yep. Hell yeah. So yeah, come and join us there. If you do support us on Patreon as well, you know, there is a special just Patreon only couple of rooms in there, so that's probably where we would put the Schneider stuff.
That, and I also think we did a game night this last Friday. It was me, Ryan, Sean, and Sarah, and it was mm-hmm. a absolute fucking blast. And I think Going forward, we probably maybe even turn half those nights into like Patreon party nights, where we just play those with the Patreon people. And then we'll open it up to the general Discord people too, because the more people we get in, the more fun we can have. But also, if you don't want to come, fuck you. We like our tight-knit little family. We had fun with just the four of us.
We're like, please, guys, everybody come and join us. Also, if you don't want to, go fuck yourself, huh?
If you don't chew Big Red.
You don't chew experience grinds. Fuck you.
It was great, man. I made myself cry from laughter last time we played.
Oh, so you know, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Nobody makes Kyle laugh like Kyle laughs.
Nobody does. I know what's funny.
It was pretty tubular.
So anyways, Sean, you are up next week, and based on the breaks system. So what are you bringing to the table?
All right. So I spent, okay, so this is going to be, I'm going to post two things to you guys. And the first one was going to be, my original going into today was last weekend we saw the new Final Destination. And so then we then spent the next 2 days rewatching all of the Final Destinations, which was a lot of fun. So I was going to come into here and be like, Final Destination, obviously. But Kyle and Ryan, you did that in like episode 170 something.
Which one? The first one?
We did the first one.
The first one, yeah.
We did the first one for one of the Octobers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's either going to be Final Destination 2 to continue on from that, or Pee-wee as himself.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a two-part doc. It's 3 hours total. That just came out.
I did not expect that swerve.
Right? I thought it was going to be something in line with the
I thought it was going to be Final Destination 2 or 3, and I was going to like hold up my fingers from under here.
If we do that, we're just never going to get to 2.
So I'm stand apart from the voting, because next week I will be on a cruise in Alaska and probably will not be able to join in.
Okay. Oh,
so my opinion matters nothing. So I almost would say like hold, honestly, both sound good. I'd like to see both of these.
Well, here's my
I have seen Final Destination 2 though. So
you guys were voting earlier on favorite Final Destinations. I 2 is my favorite.
Wow. 2's you're good. Out your goddamn 2's mind.
Good. I like it's all been a of long them. Time since it's I've not my seen favorite of them.
I really like 2 a lot. But
anywho,
I've never seen the Pee-wee documentary, and I love Pee-wee Herman. Paul Reubens
just came out.
Is a saint. We stand Paul Reubens on this podcast. Paulcast?
It's Paul Reubens. It's officially the
Paul
Reubens
all the time, baby.
We're eating Reubens on the Paulcast.
Oh, that sounds so fucking good.
Sean, you got to pick, buddy. You pick. It's your week, my friend.
Well, I want to hear Brian's opinion here.
Oh.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen a Final Destination movie, and I feel like I've been getting the itch, but I also, I mean, I love Pee-wee. I love me some Pee-wee.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, going based solely off of the tone of voice from the two of you and how you're like, it's been a long time since I've seen a Final Destination, but I love me some Pee-wee. Like, we're going Pee-wee on this. So okay. Pee-wee as himself, it is on Max, two-part docu.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Pee-wee as himself.
Right on. Well,
Ryan, you can watch it.
I think it was your week, so you get to take it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got it perfectly, boys. Listeners, you can go squeak, squeakity, squeak, squeak yourself.
Go squeak yourself.